back. My unit skids across the floor and through the pavilion threshold. A final gust slams the door shut after us. In the sudden stillness, I blink dust from my eyes. The Tigris Pavilion, the Rani's main social area, comes into focus. I never spent much time here, but it too looks different. The black and white tiled fountain has run dry, the water basin slimy and stagnant. Barren weapon racks line the far portico wall. Gone are the countless blades and staffs that the Raja's wives trained with.
"General Naik," Opal says, her stance alert, "we aren't alone."
Brock steps out from behind a low wall. My whole body locks with shock.
"General Naik," Brock strides to me, "we have been apart a while."
He hauls me into a hug. My arms pressed at my sides. My brother's golden eyes gleam. I'm struck by how alike they are to Chit's.
"What are you doing here?"
Natasha thumps him on the shoulder.
"We've been searching for you, you dolt. You scared the sky out of Devon."
"I only scared Devon?"
he teases, and Natasha hits him again. Yatin grabs Brock up in a wholehearted embrace. My brother's voice squeaks out.
"Missed you too, big man."
Yatin puts Brock down and rubs his head, mussing his coppery hair. Brock scans Opal up and down.
"You look worse off than I do. Where are Rowan and Mother?"
Opal turns away, teary. I let Yatin explain. His gentle burr cushions everything he says.
"Mathura as well, but Rowan won't be joining us."
Brock's eyes spread in understanding. He lightly touches Opal's arm.
"My sympathies."
Across the pavilion, behind low walls and lattice screens, shuffling noises and whispers sneak out from the wives' divided dining patio. Brock whistles.
"You can come out! It's just my brother!"
"Just his brother?" "God's alive, Brock," I say. "I thought you'd been captured." He glances from me to Opal and back again.
"Didn't Opal tell you I got away?"
"That was days after I followed the Imperial Army looking for you."
A flood of women pours into the main pavilion from the dining patio. The assembly is made up of Rani's, courtesans, and palace servants, each group differentiated by their hair and attire. Rani's wear their long hair loose down their backs, and their saris are elegant and intricate, while the courtesans tie their hair back in braids, their apparel more garish in design and color. Servants wear plain robes that are boxy in shape. Children of all ages accompany them, holding hands with and carried by nursemaids. The stunning Rannies and courtesans, all scarred in one way or another from their days competing for rank in the arena tournaments, file into the pavilion until it is full. Brock explains in a hushed voice.
"I was thrown from the wing flyer when we were struck in the sky. I fell into the morass, and the crash knocked me out. The army probably thought I was dead or would be soon. When I came to, I found the crash site, but Opal and the army were gone. I didn't know how to get to you and Mother and Lestari, so I went to the nearest village, borrowed a horse and rode here. I walked up to the palace gates and surrendered to Hostin. He gave me the option of rejoining the rebels or staying with the women. After what he did to you and Kali, I couldn't stomach serving him again."
"You've been here, with these women all this time?"
"Good idea, huh?"
Brock winks at a pair of very pretty Rannies, and they giggle. At my short sigh, he sobers.
"I knew Kali and you would eventually return for the Rannies. Coming here was the surest way I could think of to find you."
I grip the back of his neck and drag him against me. "I'm glad you're all right."
"You too."
He pats my back and lets me go.
"We should probably address the women. They don't have much patience these days."
Our audience's stares pull me back. A few courtesans whisper to each other. I hear one slur Natasha's name like an obscenity. She holds herself with an air of aloofness, but stays close to Yatin's intimidating bulk. A servant steps forward, Long-heeled red scars run down her cheek and over one eye.
Where is Kindred Kalinda?
The whispers cease, and Yatin sets his mouth in a grim line. I don't know. My voice falls off, dragged away by worry.
I'm certain the gods are watching over the kindred,
says a young Rani, a baby propped on her hip.
I'm Shyla.
She motions to the pair of Ranis who tittered at Brock earlier.
That's Ashana and Parisa. And the woman there?
She gestures at the scarred servant with downcast eyes.
Is Asha, Kalinda's servant.
I recognize them now. Ashana was one of Tarek's favored four. Asha, the servant, once wore a heavy veil that hid her facial scars. She took good care of Kali. Shyla moves in closer.
We're the kindred's friends. But some of the women are upset that she ran when the rebels invaded.
From the women's accusatory glares, they consider Natesha and Kalinda's actions cowardly. But Kali has been fighting for her people since she left, and Natesha is here now. The truth of their efforts scalds my tongue. Brock tugs my arm, turning us away from the crowd.
They don't know what's happening outside these walls. Aston believes they're too beneath him to tell them anything, and I didn't want to upset them even more. We should speak in private.
He resolves and tosses the women a charming grin.
We apologize for interrupting your breakfast. Please return to your meal with your children. We'll gather again shortly.
He escorts Arani to the dining patio. She smiles at him as they go, and they pick up more women and children along the way. Skies above. Brock hasn't told them he's a burner. Gradually, everyone returns to their meal, except Shyla, Riza, and Ashana, and the servant, Asha, whom he invites to stay. We gather around the fountain. Brock returns and motions for me to start. I do not waste time on pleasantries. These women are all battle survivors. They can handle the truth. The Imperial Army, 10,000 men strong, has gathered outside the city wall.
That's good, isn't it?
Parisa asks. No, the army is being led by a demon who escaped from the void. I wait for my explanation to permeate. The demon is disguised as Raja Tarek. Ashana and Parisa gasp. Shyla covers her open mouth.
But Raja Tarek is dead.
Frown marks indent Asha's scarred brow.
We saw his body. Before he burned it, Hostin threw it on a refuse cart and carried it around the city for all to see.
Raja Tarek is dead, I affirm. The demon has convinced the army that the gods sent him back to this life to avenge the empire against the warlord.
This demon Raja,
Shyla glances at her child, one of Tarek's heirs.
He's headed for the palace?
Yes. His freedom relies on his success. The Imperial Army is trying to break through the city wall right now. Ashana blanches.
But we have no way to defend ourselves. The rebels took our weapons.
Parisa frowns at her fingers.
They even confiscated my favorite nail file.
The Lestarian Navy is on its way here, I say. Kalinda and Prince Ashwin might be with them.
Might?
Brock asks. Some of this information is news to him as well. Hostin was supposed to meet them and discuss allying, but it was a ruse. I believe they're alive, but I have no idea where they are. Opal clutches my arm. A second later, an ear-splitting explosion goes off, and a cloud of dirt stains the skyline. Everyone quiets across the pavilion and in the dining patio. The palace walls and floors rumble. The Gaeler releases me, her hand shaking.
The army has broken through the city wall.
Curse Hostin for his arrogance. Despite Anjali's assertions about the rebels' superiority, Udug bludgeoned his way through. Shyla bounces her baby on her hip nervously.
We need to warn the others.
We can do better than that, counters Parisa. We can fight. The Raja's wives and courtesans have ample experience contending for their lives, and the scars from their rank tournaments prove it. A piece of Parisa's earlobe was hacked off, and scars run widthwise across Eshana's torso. Shyla is missing two fingers on her left hand. These women are dedicated daughters of the land goddess Ki, and have the right to defend themselves, their homes, and their families. They are not standard soldiers. They are better. They are sister warriors. But even they cannot stand against the demon Raja and triumph. I should warn them of our remote chance of victory, though I doubt that would discourage them. It did not change my mind. I, too, am willing to fight against Uduk for all that I love. The Ranis and courtesans deserve that same choice, and perhaps together we can make a difference. Brock, I say, how fast can you find their weapons? No one knows the palace passageways better than he does.
Could take a while. Gaelers are monitoring the corridors.
I can help, Asha offers, her voice shy. I was there when they stashed them. They're in an antechamber off the throne room. That's in the center of the palace, Natesha grumbles.
Asha nods.
I can lead us through the servants' passageways. One connects to the antechamber, but the door is locked on the outside and I don't have a key. We'd have to go through the throne room to the antechamber and unlock the door from the inside. We can use the passageway to carry the weapons out.
I make a split-second decision. Asha and I will go.
Won't the rebels be guarding the main entrance? Natesha asks. You'll have to pass by it to enter the throne room.
Brock hops slightly on his feet, eager to help.
I'll take care of the guards at the main entrance.
Good, I reply. Yatin and Natesha, stay here with Opal. Defend the entryways. Hostin may do something rash if he feels threatened or suspects we're organizing our troops. Opal speaks up, wearing a mask of intensity.
I'll cover everyone's movements the best I can.
I hearten her with a quick, one-armed embrace, and she tucks into my side to lengthen our connection. Her need for comfort is so great, I regret not consoling her sooner.
We'll help too, Ishana offers. Parisa, Shyla, and I will tell the other women what's happening. Yatin and I will help answer their questions, says Natesha.
The Ranis assess her, a lower-ranking courtesan in their strict hierarchy.
Good idea,
Shyla says, slipping her arm through Natesha's. She leads her ahead of Yatin and the others to the dining patio.
Did you hear him?
Parisa whispers to Ishana as they go.
Devon called us his troops. I wouldn't mind being under his command,
Ishana replies. Their giggles drift away, and Yatin lumbers after them. Asha goes to the doorway of the servants' passageway and waits.
I hesitate to leave my brother so soon after finding him. I still need to have a word with him about Chit.
But a new worry stops me. What if Brock is excited to hear about his father? He, Mother, and Chit will be a family, and I do not know how I will fit in. Our conversation can wait. Look after yourself, I say. Brock grasps me by the shoulder.
Stop worrying about me, Devon. I've been sneaking around the palace since I learned to walk.
We'll meet back here shortly, I promise. My words are partly snatched away by rising winds. The rebels are gathering their defenses against the army. Time to move. I join Asha at the doorway and pause to look back. Wind lashes at the silk draperies. Brock's hair dances about his brassy eyes. I wave farewell and duck into the passageway.
25. Kalinda. Hot wind guides the Mahati Falcon over the waves of ginger sand dunes. Ashwin and Jemmy stoop forward in apprehension as dust builds on their skin. I search the blurry horizon, sepia fading to azure heavens, for the City of Gems. A shadow deepens on the skyline, materializing into view. Civilization rests upon an old, rounded mountain. The turquoise palace appears first, its gold-domed roofs a burnished reflection of the desert sun. White-walled towers gleam like ivory teeth above the drab city, kneeling at the palace's feet. Red-coated soldiers flying Tarachand banners with black scorpions swarm the outer wall. They crowd a blown-out hole and fling huge rocks to smash the gap wider. The Imperial army is only minutes from breaching the city. Devon and the others would have found a safer, quicker route past the wall to await the Navy. He will expect our arrival, so Rowan should be listening for us. Please, hear us coming. Tinley clucks her tongue, and Char dips lower. The falcon circles a soft-mounded dune and lands. Jemmy slips off, and then Oshwin. He extends his arms to me. My feet hit the sand, and my knees crumple. I clutch his shoulders and wait for feeling to return to my lower half. I've been stationary too long, I explain. The corners of his mouth crease. He stays close a moment until I can transfer my weight to my feet. Numbness runs down my legs, but my knees adjust to standing and hold strong. I must be off, Tinley says from upon her saddle. The Mahati falcon digs her hook-like beak under a scrub brush and comes up with a scorpion to chomp on.
Will you go to Paljor?
Oshwin asks. I wish I... Tinley halts herself. My father says wishes are for dreamers, not doers.
Your father may be the biggest dreamer of all, Oshwin returns.
Chief Naresh is a pacifist, a rare visionary and advocate for peace.
You only have one home, Tinley.
I sigh inaudibly, or so I thought. Oshwin brushes his hand against mine. Neither of us has been blessed with a family praying for our safety. Tinley's devotion to her falcon is admirable, but she may be avoiding Paljor for another reason. Perhaps she is not ready to confront her memories of Bia and replace them with Char. But I hope she finds the strength to go home. Thank you, Tinley. I stroke Char's feathers. Let the sky lead you, the land ground you, the fire cleanse you, and the water feed you. And you. Tinley yanks on the reins, and the falcon launches into the air. They soar away from the late afternoon sun, back over the hungry, brutal desert. Oshwin stares in the opposite direction, at the gleaming palace domes. I slip my hand into his. He has not seen his palace, his legacy, as an adult. It must be odd to return to a place that belongs to him, but is vacant of memories. Jemmy frowns at our linked hands.
Should we go?
I release Oshwin to pull my dagger. Jemmy brought a trident from her homeland, wielding it with poise. We ascend the rise and go down the other side. As we climb another dune, I slip and fall forward. The parts of me that are not yet numb radiate iciness. Jemmy crawls to the crest and lies on her belly, batting sand fleas away. Oshwin edges up beside her. I force myself to crawl the incline to them and peer over the ridge. We are about 1,000 strides away from the rearmost ranks of the army. The hole in the wall is finished. Hundreds of soldiers push catapults and wagons through the passage. My anxiety mounts as more troops disappear into the city. The protection of the palace relies upon the rebel army. They must uphold the palace's outer wall until the navy arrives. By morning, they will be begging for our aid.
We'll wait here until the entire army is through, and then we'll follow, Oshwin says.
Jemmy grabs his forearm.
Did you feel that?
Feel what?
She shushes him, and then launches to her feet.
Run!
Jemmy takes off across the dune, in clear sight of the army. I gape at her. What is she? A fearsome tremble rises from the ground. Oshwin and I scramble up. The quaking grows to a knee-buckling roar like a slumbering dragon has awoken. Jemmy does not slow for us, but sprints directly east to the river. Oshwin and I clamber after her across shifting sand. My leaden legs and feet, weighed down by numbness, impede my speed. Oshwin grabs me and helps me along. Out in the open, our view of the army is unhindered. They see us too. But as we run, an infantry drops and vanishes into the desert floor. A strong tremor jolts up my legs. I weave and Oshwin catches my balance. Jagged cracks snake across the ground, spreading wider and wider.
Jemmy is carried away on the far side of one rift, and we are stranded on the opposite half. Ashwin and I go right up to the ledge. The chasm between us is wider than a catapult wagon. Jemmy summons a bridge of compact sand to span the gap.
Hurry!
Ashwin pushes for me to go first. I stumble across the temporary conduit, Ashwin right behind me. I reach Jemmy on the other side. Just before Ashwin meets us, another tremor opens the crevice broader and the bridge disintegrates. Ashwin leaps but misses my outstretched hand. Jemmy throws up a burst of sand, blasting him in an arc above our heads. He falls and lands in a roll beside us, dusty and coughing. The ledge beneath us shakes. The two halves of the gulch are closing. Jemmy yanks Ashwin to his feet. We lurch down the shifting dune to the river, sidefoot into the muddy bank, and splash into the cool water. Behind us, the quakes in the desert cease. The troops surrounding the city wall have disappeared. I scan the sandy plain. Where did they go? Jemmy's chest heaves, her trousers wet up to her knees and her chin quivering.
A powerful trembler split the desert floor open. The soldiers fell into the cracks, and the trembler closed them again.
The warlord did this. Hostin is the most powerful trembler known. Horses, wagons, catapults, hundreds of men, all devoured in sandy crevices and entombed. Those soldiers were not our enemy. They were our people. God save them, I pray. Ashwin sloshes out of the river, his strides hasty. We backtrack to the army's burial site. Jemmy closes her eyes in anguish. I listen for the screams of survivors. But death prevails. Lonely winds swirl sand tunnels across the barren war front. Please let Devon be in the city. Let him be anywhere but here. The surviving troops have marched beyond the wall. Blue flames and eerie blue-gray smoke mark their progression up the winding roads to the palace. Udug leads the campaign, clearing their path with his destructive cold fire. Given the number of casualties, his escape must be more than chance. Anjali said he was growing more powerful. He could have burned through the wall, but he relished knocking it down and forcing the rebels to retaliate. In one act, the demon Raja proved that he is beyond Hastin's abilities. Ashwin picks up a stray kanda, the only object left of the men who stood here, and steals through the opening. Jemmy and I traverse the wrecked clay bricks, my blade drawn and her trident in hand. Under the shadow of the breached city wall, Ashwin's and my gazes are guided to the turquoise palace looming above. Welcome home, I tell him.
26. Devon. I stand straight as a pole against the corridor wall. Asha waits beside me, listening alertly. My muscles are stiff from hours of skulking down from the upper floor of the outer wing to the center of the palace. The door to the throne room is around the corner, but we can go no farther without the rebel guards at the main entrance seeing us. Where in God's name is Brock? He should have caused his distraction by now. A quake rattles up from the ground, extending in huge, terrible waves. Tapestries fall, and glass orbs shatter against the floor. Furniture skids across the tiles. I peer around the corner at the main entry. No rebels. I do not know how Brock managed it, but this must be his distraction. I dart out to check the entry and double stairways. Both are empty. I gesture to Asha, and we slip into the throne room. Daylight shines down from the high casements. Gone are the tidy rows of floor cushions for the Raja's court to kneel upon. Tables have replaced them, set up in stations around the room. Upon the dais, the Raja's throne is tipped over. One leg is broken, as though kicked free. Asha hurries to the antechamber while I guard the entry. She tugs on the handle, but the door is stuck.
Someone jammed the hinges with stones.
She uses her nails to try to pick the hinges clean. Noises sound in the entry hall. I snatch up a floor cushion as a defense and lean against the doorframe. The patter comes closer. I hold the cushion like a shield. I should have searched for a proper weapon. A peacock struts by. I lower the cushion on an exhalation. The next intruder could be a rebel, so I leave my post to help Asha unseal the antechamber door. We need something to pry it open with, I say, searching the tables for a makeshift tool. An errant wind ruffles the swooping draperies, and a voice speaks. I thought I heard a couple of rats. Anjali struts into the throne room. Asha goes stock still. Annoying little vermin, aren't you? We share the same enemy, I reply, my gaze snug upon her weapon. Gusts spin about her, coils of sky poised to strike. We should help each other. Help us? You'll only ever be in our way. Anjali hurls one of her squalls at Asha, slamming the servant into the wall. Then she sweeps a gale at me and tosses me off my feet. I hit the hard floor, pain exploding up my side, and roll over. Anjali crouches down and presses her chakram to my throat. Don't move, or I'll take your head off. The demon Raja is coming, I say. Give the Ranis and courtesans back their weapons, and let us fight him with you. She scrapes the blade across my throat, almost breaking skin. Which would upset Kalinda more? Taking your limbs off one by one, or winnowing you so slowly you'll wish I'd decapitated you? I hit her hands straight up and lunge for her chakram. Anjali knees me in the mouth. Stars shoot across my vision, and she seizes my throat. Our skin-to-skin connection is all she needs. Her powers dive inside me and suffocate the sky from my lungs. Your kind are worthless, scarabs. Her asphyxiation process is torture. She squeezes out every puff of air, first from my muscles to weaken me, and then my organs. My pulse thuds slower, each beat a hollow echo, and my vision distorts. I hear a whack, and Anjali slumps over. I gasp for saving breaths. Drawing in the precious air reawakens my senses. Asha stands above me, clutching the broken leg of the Raja's throne. Still wheezing, I push Anjali off me and take her chakram. Asha tosses aside her makeshift club, her pale face stark against her red scars. Come on, I pant. Using the chakram, I pry out the rocks jamming the door and force it open. The antechamber is full of hand wagons stacked with the Rani's weapons. Opposite our entry is the exit to the servant's passageway Asha spoke of. Anjali is still passed out in the throne room, but voices echo from the entry hall. I pile more daggers, halatis, and swords on top of two hand wagons. Asha and I both grab handles. She checks the servant's passageway and waves me forward. Shouts erupt behind us. I only distinguish Hostin's voice.
Let them have their measly steel. We haven't time for this. Return to the palace wall!
We steer the hand wagons through the dim passageways and lug them one at a time up steep stairwells. Finally, Asha wedges open a lower door, and we enter the Tigris Pavilion. Asha and I wheel the weapons out and stop to gather our breaths. Natesha rushes over, Yatin stalking close behind her. The Rani's courtesans and servants have congregated on the floor cushions. Opal stares up at the darkening sky, her eyes blank and ears listening. Natesha lifts a kanda off the top of the pile.
Oh, how I've missed you. Good work, Devon.
I couldn't have done it without Asha, I wheeze. The timid servant blushes. Where's Brock? Yatin also chooses a kanda.
He isn't back yet. He mentioned something about going beyond the palace wall and then left right after you.
I bank down a rush of unease. This does not mean something went wrong. Returning from beyond the palace wall would take him longer. But how exactly did Brock cause the tremor that distracted the guards? I turn to Opal for her report.
I'm sorry, she says. My range of hearing is lessening as the army approaches. Udug's powers are dwarfing mine. I cannot hear anything outside the palace walls.
Explosions go off in the city, Some of the women shriek and duck. The winds kick up, and storm clouds steamroll across the sky, blotting out the sunset. Thunderheads crash, chased by flashes of lightning. The rebel army is deploying, and we must too. Will the women fight with us? I ask.
They're confused, answers Natasha. We told them Raja Tarek is dead, but some of them only gleaned that he's coming to release them and their children. We need to rally them.
We will start by returning their control. I select my old friend, a military-grade Kanda, and pick up a second. I carry both Kandas to the women and lift my voice. The Imperial Army has been deceived by a demon. Their counterfeit commander does not care for us or our empire. The true ruler of the Tarachand Empire is Prince Ashwin, and Kalinda Zacharias is your kindred. She has not forsaken you. She fled here to find and protect the prince. She knows that to save the empire, she must preserve its heir. Natasha comes to my side.
Tell them you trust the prince,
she whispers. I bristle. She wants me to lie? Natasha huffs impatiently and addresses her peers.
Prince Ashwin gave Kindred Kalinda the choice to wed him or go free. He has never spoken of retaining me as his courtesan, and he won't force any of you to stay in wedlock or servitude to his inherited throne.
The women murmur to each other in astonishment.
Prince Ashwin is a fair and noble ruler. He cares for his people and the fate of our empire.
A clatter of thunder foreshadows crooked bolts of lightning flashing overhead. The women cry out and stoop down. A baby wails, and mothers cradle their little ones nearer. I cannot bring myself to preach to these frightened women about the prince's virtues, but I can warn them about Udug.
The demon Raja doesn't care for your well-being, I shout. He hungers to wipe out our world.
I hand my spare Kanda to a Rani with thick white scars on her arm.
You're free to decide your own fate. You can fight for your homeland, or stand by and watch it fall.
Parisa and Ashana rise and come forward to choose a weapon. Shyla passes her baby to a nursemaid and selects a sword. Asha would have received less training than most of the women here, yet she picks up two halidis. They and my friends join me, each armed, and we start for the doorway.
Where are you going?
Arani calls.
To fight, I reply. If you wish for your children to live through the night, you'll pick up a weapon and come with us.
Outside the Tigris Pavilion, through the corridor casements, I see rebel soldiers stationed in the garden. Tremblers fortify the perimeter wall, and galers conduct the thunderstorm. Repeated lightning strikes glint above. Farther out in the city, Udug's spooky blue flames flicker closer.
Hostin knows we're coming, Opal says. Devin, he's waiting for you in the entry hall.
Only the sister warriors who collected weapons stand with me. I do not wait for the other Ranis and courtesans to come. I leave the wives' wing for the central palace. At the landing of the curved stairway and the rotunda entry, Hostin shouts orders. Out the open main door, I see tremblers erect a thick barrier of clay bricks to protect the front gate, and aquifers roll heavy water barrels into the grounds and set them on end. Anjali sits on a lower step of the opposite staircase, pressing a compress to the back of her head. Hostin's gray eyes bore into mine.
Tell me why I shouldn't smash your bones to pieces for accosting my daughter.
We're here to fight with you. He leers, all surliness.
We don't need you interfering, Captain.
General, I correct. Prince Ashwin appointed me as head of the Imperial Army. Hostin sniffs in dismissal and starts to go. I call after him.
We deserve to go to battle too.
He revolves on his heels.
Were your people hunted and slaughtered?
He asks, then waits for my reply.
No. I was away from home when the soldiers came to my village. They broke down my door and executed my wife and sons. I found Anjali, a newborn, bundled in a blanket. My wife had hidden her in a pot so the soldiers wouldn't find her. I'm sorry. I don't want your apology, he growls, trembling the floor. I want you to stop wasting my time. Retreat to the wives' wing and take these women with you.
I follow his gaze to the lines of armed Ranis and courtesans packing the curved staircases. Shyla and Asha lead the troops, Parisa and Ashana beside them. I do a swift head count. Nearly all the women have come. I inflate my chest, my pride uncontainable. These sister warriors can hold their ground in battle. Uduk's army is 10,000 strong. You'd be a fool to refuse their aid. The warlord balls his hands into fists like two sledgehammers. He could grind my bones to dust. I have suffered a trembler's grinding once before, but I do not let my remembrance of the agony move me.
You could never understand, he says. You're not a father. All of this, unseating Tarek, seizing his palace, facing a demon, is to make a better world for my daughter.
He points at Anjali on the staircase.
She is the reason I will not let you stand in my way.
Many of these Ranis and courtesans are mothers. They want their children to survive the night, just like you.
I let their children live!
Hostin bellows, stamping so hard he dents the marble tile.
I could have slaughtered Tarek's wives and sons like he slaughtered mine, but I showed them mercy. These women should drop to their knees and thank Anu they do not know true heartache.
In the wake of his echoed anger through the rotunda, I reply, if our people do not come together, we will all know that sorrow. None of us will have a future. Warning shouts reach us from outside the main entry. Then the palace walls shudder. The sister warriors clutch the staircase railing. I widen my stance, bracing until the shaking passes. A rebel races in and reports,
they've armed their catapults!
Hostin marches out, the ground vibrating with his every step. Anjali and I hurry after him. Night has fallen. Driven away by the thunderheads. Booms ricochet from catapults at a distance, and several boulders sling toward the palace in an arch.
Redirect! Shouts the warlord.
Winds propel the boulders back over the wall, into the city. A lightning bolt strikes one, breaking the boulder apart. Rocks the size of my fist shower the courtyard. Before they pelt us, Anjali blasts them away with a gust. Aquifers unleash a downpour from the storm clouds, drenching my turban and dripping into my eyes. The thick sheet of rain will hinder the army's view and slick the catapult's inner workings, but that will only slow them. Uduk and his soldiers will reach the wall, and the Bootas will need more than winds and rain and quakes to defeat them. Buta powers are limited, and even with their combined strength, the rebels will tire against an army this size. We all pray the rebels can overpower Uduk, but he has already breached the city when they thought he could not. Every single warrior, Buta or not, must stand against him.
Hostin, I plead, you need us.
The warlord taps his index finger agitatedly against his thigh, his gaze darting over the finished clay wall blocking the palace gate.
Very well. Fight at your own peril. Station your troops on the ramparts. They'll intercept the soldiers. The rebels will combat Uduk.
Father! Anjali objects. Hostin shushes her with a low growl and transfers his stony stare to me.
Move your sister warriors into position, General.
My troops will be the first line of defense up on the wall, but I have faith in our ability to hold the line against the soldiers. I return to the sister warriors waiting in the entry hall and scan their solemn countenances. The rebels have accepted our aid. It is my great honor to lead you into battle. On your life, Do not let the Demon Raja pass through this gate. Defend your family and homeland. Make Ki proud. The sister warriors hoist their weapons. Yatin, Natesha, and Opal do the same. Have I done wrong by them? Am I leading them to their doom? I plow through my fear before they detect my uncertainty. We need only hold out until Kali and the Navy arrive. Bowing my head, I offer up an earnest prayer. Great Anu, preserve the Tarachand Empire and guide us to victory. My troops repeat the prayer, a solemn echo of our united devotion. Then I pivot and lead them out under the war-strewn sky.
27. Kalinda. The cold cripples me halfway up the hill. I sway forward and land on all fours in the road. Between the rain and the deadness in my muscles, I cannot feel my feet. If the rebels' intent is to drive the invaders back with a storm, their strategy is working on at least one person. Ashwin notices I have fallen behind and jogs back to fetch me. Do you need to rest? Just for a minute. I collapse against him. His soul fire glows like a beacon, but I am so frozen not even his warmth appeals to me. Jenny backtracks to us.
Is she hurt?
She just needs to get warm.
Even to me, Ashwin's assurance sounds feeble. He lifts me into his arms and hefts me up the hill. A catapult snaps nearby, flinging a boulder at the palace. Ashwin freezes and then sidesteps out of the middle of the road. Just when the threat is gone, a mighty gust redirects the boulder at the city. The projectile soars overhead and smashes into several huts on the neighboring road.
Keep going,
Jenny says, watching for more flying boulders. She and Ashwin speed up, but everything within me turns sluggish, as though I am sinking in quicksand. Ashwin beelines for a large structure on the next higher road, the Brotherhood Temple. Jemmy pries the front door open with the prongs of her trident. The temple corridors and chambers are fixed in shadows. She lights a lamp, and Ashwin pursues her into the chapel. The lamp's sparse glow reveals murals of the sky god and his consort Ki. They remind me of the mural in the Samia Temple Chapel I grew up admiring. I've always wanted to learn to paint. I slur. Even my tongue is lethargic. Jaya loved my sketches. Did you know I sketched you, Ashwin? Tarek thought I drew him, but he should have known better. Ashwin lays me on the altar and touches my forehead.
Sweet Amlil, you're frozen.
Am I? I try to wiggle my fingers or toes, but feel nothing. Jenny tests my temperature for herself. She draws back as though my skin burns.
I'll look for a blanket and dry clothes for her.
Ashwin expels a breath, his gratitude immense.
I'll start here. You check the other rooms.
Jenny lights another lamp and heads off. Ashwin skims my cheek, though I hardly feel the gesture.
I'll be right back. I won't go far.
He takes the lamp across the chapel to search the baskets along the far wall. Shadows plunge into the gap of light, dropping around me. My muddled thoughts pull me back and forth between now and my childhood, when I was confined to my sickbed. More than once, Healer Baka blanketed me in snow to reduce my fevers and calm the fire within me. Unlike Inda, I love the snow. But I would trade never seeing it again for the cure to this poison. Perhaps this coldness is a feeling. For this gradual decay of my senses and faculties, this loss of control, this is how it must feel to die. The realization comes at me as a piercing whisper. The end of my path does not lie far ahead. Death is here, in this sanctuary, upon this hallowed altar. A splinter of fear embeds itself inside me. I cannot leave this world now, not like this, with the godly part of me smothered. I watch the mural of Anu and Ki, brightened by Ashwin's faraway light, and wait for the gods to intervene. Something else comes. Tarek's smoky figure separates from the gloom that grips me.
Hello, love. I've always wished to have you laid before me on an altar.
I pry apart my chapped lips, my whisper tattered. How did you find me?
I traveled the roadways of shadows. They led to every cover of darkness in the mortal realm.
He sits beside me on the altar and fiddles with my wet hair.
I've come to be with you while you pass on from this life.
Why?
You know why. You must believe me when I say I love you. I had high regard for my other wives, even your mother, Yasmin. How I worshipped her. But you challenged me in a way no other woman did.
He leans his mouth over my ear.
Do you know what will happen when the cold fire inside you takes over? Your soul fire will go out, and you will consist solely of the dark lineage within you. You will no longer belong to this world. You will belong in the void, with me.
My tears freeze to icy drops. I have made poor choices and done wrong, but I cannot bear an eternity in the dark with Tarek. That is my worst fate imaginable. Please don't let that happen. Please help me. He shifts his lips to my forehead.
Shh, love. Give in to the Evernight, and you will be free from sorrow and strife.
Ashwin's lamp bobs still across the chapel. Ashwin, I rasp. Tarek strokes my chin. I manage to flinch, but his demanding touch pursues me, relentlessly taking, taking, taking.
He cannot see me. Only you. Our love binds us, Kalinda.
He traces my lips and caresses my hair. I try to scream or sob, but the numbness grips me. The cold is winning. He is winning. My heart slows to a lurching plod. All physical awareness falls away, and stillness settles over me. The lack of feeling in my body hones the clarity of my mind. Our bond is not of love, but of hatred. I am anchoring Tarek to this world. I am giving him power and permission to enter my life. Healer Baka once told me that peace is a choice, a decision not to be at odds with the world. I have been at odds with Tarek for so long, I know no other way. But we are not the same. I have to make a better choice than he did. I must let go, or I will earn a place with him. Words swell up in my throat, hurting everywhere. I forgive you. He tilts closer to hear. I repeat myself, strongly. I forgive you for claiming me. I only married you to end your life. I've loathed you since we met, but I cannot hold on to my hatred any longer. I forgive you for taking me from my home and ruining my dream of peace. He unleashes an animalistic growl.
Kalinda, this is nonsense. You love me. You're my wife.
I forgive you for murdering all those innocent Buddhas and destroying their families. I forgive you for being a poor father to Ashwin and for your unkindness toward your wives and courtesans. My voice snags, but I push onward. I even forgive you for taking away my best friend. I forgive you for killing Jaya. Tarek's itchy darkness weakens. He wrenches at my chin.
You owe me your life. I did as the gods willed by claiming you. I made you my kindred. Without me, you are no one. History will only remember you because of me.
More frozen tears cling to my eyelashes, blurring my view. I forgive you because you brought Devon to me. You introduced me to Ashwin and you united Natesha and me in friendship. His darkness recedes to smoke. He tries to silence me with his hand over my mouth, but I speak through him.
I forgive you, Tarek. For everything. Do not come to me anymore. Do not follow me in my shadow.
I'll never summon you again.
Kalinda?
Tarek's claw-like fingers snatch at my hair but pass right through. His haziness tremors in rage.
I am your husband. You'll never be rid of me. Never! Within me, a heaviness I am so accustomed to carrying falls away, and peace warms me enough to melt my icicle tears. Goodbye, Tarek. I will pray for your soul. He lunges for me, but, like smoke dispersing into the sky, the last of Raja Tarek fades. Shaky breaths tumble in and out of me. Though I am still numb, lightness fills the emptiness of his parting. I have sought freedom and peace all my life. I thought I had to fight for them, earn them, or wait until the gods saw fit to grant me both. But peace of mind was always within reach. Ashwin returns, his arms full of cloth. I found this hung over a doorway. He drapes the heavy material over me. I recognize the tapestry as the one that conceals the tunnel leading to the palace. I saw it when I came here to raise many moons ago. Ashwin, pick up my dagger. What? Why? Please just do it. He takes one of my mother's daggers by its turquoise hilt. I need your help. I am too frozen to do this on my own. I want you to cut me. With great effort, I indicate the places on my wrists. You want me to cut you? We need to let my blood. The healer in Listari said it will help. For a time. Then the poison would return twofold, but I will reap those consequences later. Ashwin backs up. I cannot hurt you. A blast discharges outside the chapel, shattering the rafters. Ashwin comes behind me and hauls me into his lap. I recline into him, too wilted to move unassisted. From the explosions growing louder and nearer, we have no time to waste. You won't hurt me, I say. I would do it myself if I could. Ashwin lowers the blade to my arm, but pulls away. I cannot do this. I drop my head against him, my breaths slow to strenuous draws. I wouldn't ask if there were another way. The last time I was forced to act in desperation, I unleashed a demon. His heart charges against my back. I did this to you, Kalinda. I released Udug. Devon has been right all along. I was selfish. I wanted my heart's wish. I dreamed of the palace, the army, the people, and you. I've never blamed you for releasing Udug. I slur. The full agony of the frost returns. A numbness will debilitate me soon. I've always wanted you to retain your throne. I need you to return my help. I roll my wrists up for him. I'm dying, Ashwin. If you don't do this... He shoves at his tears. Here and here? He traces my skin with the blade. Yes, I speak between gasps. I don't know what will emerge. When you break the skin... So stay behind me. The first time I raised, heat burst out so hot my tears puffed to steam. He trembles the dagger over my wrist. He can do this, but he must trust me. Trust himself. Ashwin rests his blade against the smooth skin. I inhale a tiny breath. Go. Ashwin cuts just deep enough to draw blood. Pain greets my demand, and a rush of freezing air flows out. The cold slaps me like a frigid wind. Ashwin suffers the onslaught and shifts the tip of the blade to my other arm, slices a little deeper, and even more winter rushes out. He drops the blade and holds my bleeding wrists. I slouch against him, beads of sweat collecting at my temples. I close my eyes and search inside myself. My soul fire burns in my inner sky. As I bleed into Ashwin's grip, the starlight becomes purer and more intense. I am still weak, far from my strongest self, but less disarrayed. Jemmy returns with her arms full of clothes and drops them with a gasp. Don't be alarmed, I say. Ashwin helped me raise. An explosion above us drowns me out. Jemmy covers her head and Ashwin bends over me. Dust and clay fall from the ceiling, spattering the altar. The roof holds, but I no longer trust our security here. Ashwin lets my wrists go and pales at the sight of his bloody hands. Jemmy passes him a cloth covering them.
Clean up. I'll help Kalinda.
He puts some distance between us while Jemmy binds my wrists with more cloth. They hurt, but the pain is more manageable than the cold and less terrifying than the numbness. The inner chill persists, ever lurking. I push my powers into my fingers. They glow blue instead of white, but my bleeding wrists bank the worst of Uduk's cold fire. For now. She ties off my bandage.
I've never seen a burner raise without an aquifer present. It's too dangerous. Ashwin must care for you very much.
Jemmy's wistful tone is almost envious. He's a good man. The return of my senses brings with them sharpened worries. We have not come upon Devon in the city. I can scarcely consider the possible dangers he and my friends could be in. Too much could have gone awry. Ashwin rejoins us.
We have to leave here.
Let's find Huston, I say. He may be more open to an alliance now. I stand with Jemmy's help and take a lamp to the corner where Ashwin unpinned the tapestry. Jemmy and Ashwin come to view the opening, the princess carrying her trident. This tunnel leads to the palace. Ashwin squints down the stairwell.
Is this the only way?
It's better than running into the army in the city. A blast rocks the temple. The ceiling sags and then crumbles, caving in. We dart down the stairs, debris tumbling after us. At the bottom, Jemmy halts the landslide of rubble with her powers, sealing off the city above. Ashwin swivels toward the open end of the passageway.
Well, that settles that.
He extends the lamp in front of him, and we navigate into the city's underground.
28. Devon. The sister warriors line up on the ramparts. Yatin, Natesha, Opal, and I are in the center of the troops, on the wall near the gate. Everyone is silent, like the flashes of lightning overhead, while we watch the army steadily approach. Gaolers conduct the storm from the palace balconies. Aquifers are stationed beside open water barrels set around the grounds. Huston and his tremblers reinforce the outer wall from the courtyard and garden. The rebel army is small, about 200 Bhutas according to my estimate, approximately the same number of sister warriors. Brock has not returned, a concern I have no time at the moment to resolve. I cannot leave my troops, so I hope and pray he finds us. The torches of the army break through the roads. The infantry and archers fan out in front of the wall, men marching and artillery wagons creaking. They are as loud and mobile as we are motionless. Manas rides with the light cavalry and raises his hand for a halt. Huston calls for the same. The rain and thunder stop, but the dark clouds still swirl, interspersed by bolts of lightning. Uduk rides up to Manas's side, identifiable by his glowing blue hands, and he dismounts. His ranks have diminished to nearly half the size, but we are still outnumbered by thousands. The disguised demon strides to the barricaded gate. The torches reveal his appearance. The sister warriors inhale in unison. He directs his speech at the shaken women.
My wives, I have come to free you. Lay down your weapons and let me into our home.
Hold your ground, I command. Don't believe his lies. Shyla answers, her tone hushed.
We know our husband. That isn't him. He isn't Tarek.
Parisa and Ashana agree in tandem. More Ranis and courtesans murmur the same proclamation down the line. He isn't Tarek. I should not have doubted them on their conviction.
Captain Naik, Uduk calls out. What falsehoods have you told my family? I told them the truth. You don't belong in our world.
Uduk scoffs and waves at Manas, who dismounts and starts for an ammunition wagon.
I have no interest in destroying my palace in my effort to return to my home. Perhaps you and I can work out an exchange. You let me through the gate, and I won't execute your brother.
Manas drags Brock out of the wagon and throws him to the ground. Brock lands on his side, motionless. His wrists are bound with snake root. My heart dips so low I feel nothing but its quickening thrum. My sky.